I think that just as we're living in a nuclear age, we have grown so tremendously in scientific knowledge, it doesn't seem too much to say that men can begin to awaken to the fact that they haven't grown enough spiritually and haven't recognized their spiritual capacities.
Once something like eating is death, then you've struck at the very heart of life. The enemy of the older radical theories may have been the ruling class. But today the stakes of whether we will reform ourselves into a new kind of human being, a new kind of society, whether we will find selves worth being, the stakes of it are simply life itself.
So I'm back for another discussion of Aristotle on friendship through the Nicomachean Ethics. And in this particular session, I want to focus on the friendship of superior and inferior. Remember last time we talked about kind of that most perfect friendship, which is amongst equals in all respects. And I think Aristotle definitely gives first place to that type of friendship. It's interesting that he next turns to the friendship of people who are somehow naturally superior or inferior. So let's get into this, because it leads to a discussion then next of political friendship, the friendship among citizens and between leaders and followers and things like this. So this is the beginning, in a way, of that more explicitly political discussion. All right, so with that in mind, let's take a look at what he has to say about superiors and inferiors. All right, so, you know, he starts off this section by saying a different species of friendship is the one that corresponds to superiority. For example, of a father towards his son, as in the picture here. And in general, he says, of an older person to a younger, or of a man towards a woman, or of any other one towards the one he rules. Okay, so in general there, even if we disagree with the male-female point at this point because of our modern sensibilities, we can't help but see that Aristotle thinks that these relationships of superior and inferior are natural and not simply man-made. Okay, so, you know, because he puts into the same category the relationship of father towards son, right, which one might be able to see as, of course, that's natural because one is fully grown and matured and more knowledgeable and so on. And the younger one is in the process, so they can't be completely equal. Or you could even perhaps see how you could say that the relationship between the older and the younger is one of superior and inferior just because of life experience, similarly to the father and the son. Although, you know, I have to say that's less obvious, right? It's less obvious because we all know that there are some old people who just are not wise at all, right? And then some younger ones who are, as we say, wise beyond their years. That's a real thing. So, but, you know, the assumption here is that there is something kind of obvious, right, to Aristotle. And then he says, of a man towards a woman. And it was obvious to Aristotle, men had certain leaderly qualities that women did not. And so he placed that into the it's just natural category. And in general, hierarchy, right, is represented here. And Aristotle definitely thought that there was something natural about hierarchy, that human beings sort of naturally ordered themselves in a hierarchical fashion. He didn't imagine that people would be completely egalitarian. But at the same time, equality is really important to Aristotle, because we've already seen him say that you can't have the very best of friends, best of friendships, unless you are equals in almost every respect. So he understands the value of equality and why it is necessary for full friendship. And yet much of human life, many of human relationships are among unequals. In fact, I'm sure he would say the vast majority are, right? That's why, you know, really close, good friendship is rare, he says. It's partly because of that. So he has to deal with all these other relationships, which he thinks of as reflecting natural hierarchy. And, you know, if we want to think in more modern terms, maybe we could imagine Aristotle saying, well, intelligence, right, is a relative factor, right? That some are far more intelligent or wiser than others. And that this is kind of built in, this sort of spectrum of intelligence. And therefore, those who have more are, in a way, quote, superior to those who have less. Maybe he would make that move. And then he would justify a difference in the friendship and relationship on that basis. So this is kind of where he's going. He also says nearby, each of these friends has a different virtue and a different function. Okay. And there are different causes of love. Hence, the ways of loving are different. And so are the friendships. Each does not get the same thing from each other then and must not seek it. Big difference between this type of friendship and the previous more full type of friendship. Okay. Here, the people involved have different functions, like the father and the son. Okay. Or in Aristotle's view, between the man and the woman, the man having certain virtues, masculine virtues, and the female having feminine virtues. And they're more or less, in his view, built to do different things. And they have, we might say, different orientations. And so when they love each other, their love is going to be different, right? The love that the man gives towards his wife is going to be different in nature than that which the wife gives towards her husband. Same thing with the father and the child. And same thing with any sort of hierarchical relationship. But interestingly, though, it's still love. There's an equalizing effect that can take place. So we'll talk more about that as we go along. Okay, so he says friendship is when a person does what their function is towards the other. So in the case of the husband and the wife, okay, for Aristotle, that would mean that the husband would, for instance, maybe provide for the wife is the income, or, you know, the person who brought in what was needed to run the household. Maybe the husband would also represent the wife in the political arena, because that was his arena, right? He might even protect the family in war. Lots of times he would be called upon to do that, right? And he would fulfill the function of the father to her children in providing for them and giving them the leadership and upbringing that they needed. So in these ways, he would be loving his wife by fulfilling his function towards her. And that is a form of friendship towards her, right? And same thing with the wife. In his view, this would mean that she was providing proper nurturing and mothering for the husband's children, that she would be managing the household and making things comfortable for her husband, that she would be attending to his needs and so on and so forth. So they would have different orientations because of their different natures, but they would be aiming at the other person's well-being. Because remember that love and friendship are about wishing the good for the other as themselves. Now, this may seem a little weird because he's talking about people as though he's categorizing them, basically. He's talking about them as though one of their chief qualities, if not their most important quality, is their function as a male, a female, a father, son, you know, this type of relationship. But at the same time, he recognizes that individuals develop strong bonds with each other. So somehow they're aiming their well-being, their, you know, well-wishing towards this individual in particular. And by fulfilling their functions towards them properly, they are not just doing their duty, which is what the way one might see it, right? But rather they are actually engaging in a personal love towards that other, okay? And he says this can be very strong, actually. And he says, though, that the better person should be loved more than he loves, that there's a differential there. okay? Which sounds terrible, but let's just explore this, right? So that would mean that in the case of husband and wife, that the husband would be loved more than he loves. And this would be because of the inequality, because one is ranked higher than the other. Or in the case of the father and the son, that the son would love his father more than the father loves the son, which is, when you think about it, it's kind of reversed now in our contemporary culture. But not that long ago, at least in the United States, so I hear, it was not that way, right? That especially when it came to fathers, there was kind of a paternal indulgence of their children. They saw themselves as kind of the leader, but maybe not like super personally engaged with their children. And the children were, you know, perhaps more interested in getting the attention of their father. That's a little bit of a stereotype and a cliche, though, because everybody's family was different. But that was kind of like the societal norm. Whereas today, I think many Americans would see that as kind of like a almost a form of child abuse. Okay, so things have changed a lot. I imagine for Aristotle, it was enough for a father to be generally very interested in his children's well-being and getting ahead in life, and that he didn't necessarily have to spend a lot of time with them. So maybe hopefully that might help to kind of like understand what he's getting at. Now, the way that he brings equality in here is interesting because he says that this can be seen as a type of equality because each part of this relationship, each person in this relationship is giving what they are capable of and what the other is due. All right. So it would be unequal, in other words, if the father, in this way of thinking, doted constantly on his son, wanted to spend all of his time with his son, you know, became his son's best buddy and stuff like that. That would be like disproportional and unequal to the relationship and to what his son actually needed or deserved at that point in time. Similarly, if the son was all like, you know, I'm not going to care what my dad thinks, and I'm not going to like listen to him, I'm going to do what I want. If he was that kind of son, he would not be giving his proportional due to his superior, and he would have created an inequality. Equality in an unequal relationship is about each person doing their part as the other person deserves it. Right. So since the father deserves more love and respect because he's the, in this way of thinking, he's the provider, he's the protector, he's the guy that actually was 50% of the ingredients that it takes to make the child. And so the child owes him everything, his life and everything, then it would be disproportional if the father didn't get more respect and love from the son than the son got from his father. I hope this is, you know, we don't have to agree with it, but I'm hoping that I'm making it clear. Now, he also says in this kind of unequal relationship, virtue is still important because he says if unequals are separated by large gaps in virtue, then friendship isn't possible. It would be more like humans' relationship to the gods. So, for instance, if the father, you know, looked at his son and his son had become a pickpocket and a thief and the father's character was far better than that, then it would be hard for the father to feel that benevolence towards the son because he wouldn't see the son as his sort of moral or ethical or, you know, virtue equal, right? He wants to see in his son somebody who for whom he has passed on that quality of virtue and is being raised up to that level. He wants to see in his wife, maybe not total equality or similarity in virtue, but as worthy of his love in, you know, the capacity that he can give it. And so if the wife is, you know, in no way virtuous and is not trying, then she's going to be more like a ward, right? Just as the son would be more like a ward, somebody who perhaps the father has to keep around or the husband has to tolerate, but not somebody that he could love, right? Because there's no understanding, there's no connection of a character nature between the two. And it would be, I would think, a source of great pain from this point of view to see the family relationship deteriorate to this level, to where the, say, the parent is more like a god to the child, who simply has to do with, you know, providing and more or less putting up with and trying to corral or trying to control somehow, punishing and so on and so forth, then there's not much of a relationship there. So, I mean, and keep that, file that away in the back of your mind as far as like when we get to political friendship more, because you can't have political friendship if the leader sees himself more like a god towards men, right? So there's the connection there. If he sees himself as a god towards men, then he's going to act like that parent who has to corral, punish, and basically coerce the child, the children, or the citizens in this case. Is not going to treat them as though they are in any way equals, and is going to disregard them to a great extent. There's not going to be any love there. Now, a little bit later, he says, friendship then consists more in loving, and people who love their friends are praised. Hence, it would seem loving is the virtue of friends. And so friends who love, whose love corresponds to their friend's worth, are enduring friends and have an enduring friendship. This, above all, is the way for unequals as well as equals too to be friends, since this is the way for them to be equalized. So there are cases where, for instance, you know, in the olden days anyway, you know, the head of the household might have an amazing friendship with the, if they're wealthy, you can imagine, with the gardener, right? Or with the cook, or the maid. Socially inferior, but extremely close. There's the potential for that. And truly respectful, despite the fact that the hierarchy remains, right? So he's acknowledging that, that, you know, inequality in capabilities and functions and therefore status does not mean that one cannot establish respectful and loving friendships within that context. But he never goes into that territory, well, you know, which we do later, where we say, well, if there is no difference of the quality, right, of the human being as a human being, then the fact that superior and inferior can form respectful relationships of love towards each other probably means that the concept of superior and inferior are inadequate to describe human beings and should be discarded. He doesn't go there. He really, you know, takes for granted hierarchy. It's natural. So, but within those, you can have even like respectful friendship between the master and the servant. That can happen. And it would happen akin, you know, each fulfilling their function, but developing this personal relationship of respect, trust, probably, right, and love as a result. Okay, so at any rate, whether that suits you well or not, I mean, it's just important to kind of know the nature of Aristotle's way of thinking. So he gives a couple of examples that I think are worthy of pointing out that are, you know, among or between unequals. For instance, he says, but friendship seems to consist more in loving than in being loved. Okay, that's a nice sentiment generally. I think friendship consists more in loving than in being loved. A sign of this is the enjoyment a mother finds in loving. For sometimes she gives her child away to be brought up and loves him as long as she knows about him, but she does not seek the child's love if she cannot both love and be loved. She would seem to be satisfied if she sees the child doing well, and she loves the child even if ignorance prevents him from according to her what befits a mother. Here he seems to be talking about a mother who allows her child to be adopted or raised by another because that is what is best for the child, and doesn't demand to even know or be loved by the child because it is enough for her to know that the child is doing well because her aim, her love, is aimed at the child's well-being, right? For its own sake. So I like that. That's an example of it's bordering on complete altruism. Generally, Aristotle isn't a thinker who recognizes altruism as a good sentiment. But here we have, maybe he's at least getting into the zone. And then near that, in the same general area, he talks about lovers. Here we might also include the erotic lover and his beloved, and the beautiful and the ugly. Hence, an erotic lover also sometimes appears ridiculous when he expects to be loved in the same way as he loves. That would presumably be a proper expectation if he were lovable in the same way, but it is ridiculous when he is not. So I just find that interesting. A lover expects to be loved in the same way as he loves, which might be possible if the two are completely equal, but otherwise it is ridiculous. And many of the love relationships of ancient Athens were definitely of unequals, either the ones between men and women or the ones between men, because many of them were between the older and the younger. So they, you know, the best friendship or the best love remained friendship between male equals, whereas erotic love was generally between people for maybe lesser but still worthy reasons, he might say, right? So like that's why he includes the beautiful and the ugly, right? It's proper for the quote ugly to have more love for the beautiful than the beautiful have for the ugly. And they can form love relationships, but they are not as high a quality as the best love relationships. Most of the love between lovers is this way, right? But still there's a proper way and an improper way for people to love each other in even those types of relationships. So again, contrasting that with the modern, more romantic view of love, in which love sort of equalizes all things. Aristotle, you know, romantic love, that is, the notion is it equalizes all things somehow. Aristotle doesn't expect that or require that in those kinds of relationships or in most relationships.